would you say if I said that I could bring them back?
I guess I'd say I never thought of that.
Well, alright, hold tight, you might wanna stand back, because one small dawn is coming intact.
St. John forward, spitting out some more words, fully intact, jacked, ready to rap and attack. Small John on your lawn, living like a gnome, hit you with my lyrics like a bullet to your dome.
The night when he comes up here is either gonna kill or he's gonna suck. But there's no in between for Mr. John Forward.
What I'm trying to say the whole time is that this is John Forward, and you're here with St. John Forward Radio, not live at Monday night on local FM as it usually is. It's being aired at 9 o'clock on a Monday night, or Wednesday on the internet if you're one of those lazy people that can't listen to it live. This is for the true fans. It's not live at all, though. This is actually the first ever remote St. John Forward episode. I'm out of town using a laptop and a microphone, and we're here and it's being recorded out of sequence. So this was recorded the day before last week's episode with Dan Terrio will have come out. So I don't know what kind of crazy nonsense is going to happen in the world in between. I'm sorry for your loss, whoever, the families of anyone who has died in between now and the airing of this episode. I'm in Fredericton. I went to a concert last night, Timber Tambor, and I enjoyed the music, but hated pretty much every other aspect of the whole thing. I've been spoiled by the 2-hour comedy show, because this one was over 3 hours, which might have been okay if there was some seats. And my body is deteriorating. I have a bad back, which doesn't help things. But standing up for 3 hours straight is really bad on my knees, and I feel like an old man saying so. I don't have a specific injury to even blame the knees on. I've never had a big knee catastrophe. I just thought of that. It's pretty good. I'm just old and my knees are cracking constantly, and after the first 45 minutes of standing up, it just starts to ache. May says that I should get a cane to kind of lean on and take some of the weight off of it, which would be nice, but no matter how necessary the cane might be, there's no way that it's not going to just look like some dorky hipster affectation that I'm putting on. I don't want to walk around with a cane. I already had a wooden tobacco pipe for many years. I'm just going to have to, someday the pain is going to be worse than the eye rolls I'd have to endure walking around with a cane. So we'll cross that bridge when I get to it. Main thing I noticed last night is about the music audience. I've said before, like, I've always kind of envied musicians because they aren't as beholden to the audience as a comedian is. Like, it's easier for a musician to have a good show with a bad audience than it is for a comedian. I think, like, you can it does make some difference, I'm sure, but you can play a song pretty perfectly to nobody, and you can play over people talking. And I floated this theory by a musician that I knew at one point, and he kind of didn't agree with me. And he said that a musician wants people to pay attention just as much as a comedian does. So if that's the case, then I want to officially blame musicians for bad comedy audience members, because musicians have been letting it slide too long. And all the same people that ruin comedy shows were ruining, to a lesser extent, the music show last night. Like, May and I aren't very tall people, so but never fails, every time that we go to a show, we'll leave like a 2-foot polite buffer of space in between us and the people in front of us, which every tall, drunk guy in the room is like, oh, that's a good place to stand. And then he scooches right in there directly in front of us. And then they're not even watching the show. They're just like yelling at each other with their friends and be like, yeah, I'm at this cool show. You're a cool show. I'm cool. You're cool. We're cool. Yeah, drinking. And not even paying attention. And a band can't hear it the same way a comedian can when people are blabbing their faces off in the audience, but it's still annoying for the people around them. If I want to listen to the band, I don't want to listen to the band plus three drunk dudes yelling at each other on top of it. That's usually not like, they don't record a lot of albums and like, hey, can we get three drunk guys in here in the studio and just lay that down over top of the beat, because that's what people want to hear. But I don't know. And this has always been, and it's not just at concerts, it was when I was a teacher too and everything else. I just don't understand why people can't just go somewhere and shut up and enjoy whatever's happening. I want to hear the band. And it's well understood that you shouldn't talk during a movie, but still people will blab through a movie if you're watching a movie anywhere other than a movie theater. The rules don't always transfer. People know that you're generally not supposed to talk during like a play or like at church or in a lecture or something. And I think most people are just wired to have their gums flapping by default, and I don't understand it. The only thing stopping them is the person that doesn't want to be interrupted creating the expectations. A comedian will call out a heckler and tell them to shut up, and most of the time we'd we'd rather not have to, but we will. But musicians will just play right through that bad, stupid audience that's not listening. I think musicians, they've been around longer, and I think they've just been beaten down by bad audiences, and they will play anywhere for anybody. Loud restaurant, let's throw a guy with a guitar in the corner as white noise that no one is paying attention to, but everyone can hear. And oh man, our band is taking it to the next level. We just got booked to play at Ribfest in a tent while people are eating ribs. That's not much different from some comedy shows, I guess. But and bad music isn't as much of an assault on the senses as bad comedy can be. But these bad music fans are coming to comedy shows and they're becoming bad comedy fans. And they think that they're doing us a favor by being there at all. I paid for this beer, so I'm going to be as obnoxious as I can. And they all had their phones out and recording it. And they're never going to watch that footage again, ever. They're just posting it on Facebook or Snapchat to prove that they were, hey, this is a place I was at that you're paying attention to more than I am right now. And they were all filming it in vertical mode because they don't know how to even do it properly. They can't even get that much right. Instead of getting more of the band in the shot, they just, hey, yeah, we need at least 1 foot of this guy's shoulder in front of me and then 3 feet above everybody in the band's head. That's a great, great video angle. I don't know why I'm doing that. But these people are coming to comedy shows and they're confused. They're used to years of music shows put on by people that they've given up on having a well-behaved audience. And we have to tell these people, usually nicely. I usually start out and tell them that, just let them know, hey, just in case you didn't know, you're being really annoying right now. And then I don't go too hard on them unless they continue after that. But got to clean up these messes left by musicians. Right, Troy Haynes, my guest?
Yeah, that's right. I don't know. I think you just could set down some rules. Hey, thanks for having me on your show, John.
Well, you're welcome. How does it feel that you're the first person that I've ever come to you?
Well, it feels like I'm feels like you're fishing for a compliment, but I would say honored. I would be honored.
No. Well, there's lots of toys here for me to play with if I need to.
Yeah,
so
if you feel the
I'm looking forward to that.
You know, it's like I think it's drunken narcissism is what gives people the bravado to like see where music is loud, where a comedy show is kind of frowned upon, but.
Yeah, it shouldn't be allowed at a music show either. Or at least have, like, there should be a separate gum flapping room.
But I think people put it hand in hand with what they're doing that, I don't know, like.
Of course I'm going to be loud and obnoxious. Yeah. And the louder your entertainment gets, the louder I'm going to be to counteract it.
That's probably why they crank music right up. Maybe we should just put, like, comedy up to 11 and.
Yeah, just like make everyone's ears bleed.
Yeah, like have the wall of sound for fucking.
Yeah, I think that's the R-bar. I think that's a good way to do it. But let's play a quick song, and we'll be back with more Troy Haynes on St. John Forward Radio. Here's some Primus. Right, we're back on St. John Forward Radio. I'm here with Troy Haynes, comedian and show producer here in Fredericton. We didn't start at the exact same time because I think I'd been doing music open mics for a while, but Troy and I did our first Wilser's Room on the same night back in January 2014, I think it was. And what do you remember about that night, Troy Haynes? How did you even how did you get tapped into the
you know, place at all? Like I thought about like how I don't know. I don't know where I heard about it. You know, it was always something that I wanted to do. And, you know, I don't remember. I think, like, I had a friend, Whitefeather, who, you know, always pushed me towards stand-up. She thought I would be good at it. And, you know, and I don't know where, what, I don't actually know what got me up there, but there I was.
Had you gone to see any of the Wilson's Room shows before?
No. No, that was like my first time in there. It was oddly enough, it was my very first stand-up show I ever attended.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm not sure how much of the music open mic time I can even count. That's why I don't have a good answer
as well, and I've been doing it.
But that was that Wilser's Room show, that was my second ever comedy show for people that came to a comedy show on purpose. I think I had done one more previous to that. It was the only time I'd ever met Lloyd Raven. They had they had a show at Somerset in St. John, and on the sign it said open mic comedy, but open mic comedy doesn't mean the same thing as open mic music. And I thought I could just show up and kind of feel like, hey, can I go on? And
how did that go?
It was okay. I said, hey, can I go on? And he kind of looked uncomfortable and didn't seem like he was probably too nice a guy to say no to me. So he let me go up and do 5 minutes, and which is the shortest set that I'd ever done at that point, because I was used to doing like full length band sets of rambling nonsense at the music open mics. But I just kind of said, I just agreed to it. And then I sat down and kind of got out the stopwatch on my clock and recorded a bit and just blew through it really fast.
I'm guessing that didn't really work so much in the band open mics when you like commandeered.
Oh no, it was, every now and then there would be maybe like five people that were actually looking in my direction and not also talking loudly over top.
It would probably work if you went to go see like the Dead Kennedys or something.
Yeah. It depends though. When I did it at, it depends on how much of the show is people actually going to see a show in general, whether it's music or anything. At that particular one that I was doing every Tuesday night, it's at, Cougars, which is McGill's now, which is the home of Sunday Laughter Dark. People didn't even really pay attention to the music. That was a show where that's just the only place where there is more than half a dozen people on a Tuesday night in St. John, and there's no cover charge or anything. So you can just go and have a place to hang out, and instead of somebody just putting like their iPod shuffle up over the PA, they've got some guy playing mediocre cover tunes. And, also sometimes there's ladies playing mediocre cover tunes. I don't want to discount them. So people weren't even paying attention to that. So to come up and ramble on for 15 to 20 minutes, and it was probably terrible also.
It was probably some really good stuff, eh? It's like semi-headliner length sets.
You know? Some of those bits have still, like, I came up with some, I think it helped with the writing. Like, I still haven't thrown away, like, those first four bits that I had written from the open mic days. The first one was Dead Mom Porno one, which I haven't done it as a stand-up set in a while. That was part of my my Honey Garlic show over the summer. And then the second one was the cheeseburger bit, which I still bring out on special occasions.
I got a question for you. Okay, it's like as you're saying this, I'm thinking, okay, it's like, to me it's almost like, when did you first like writing the stuff, right? I find that, you know, before I was a stand-up, I had bits that I had in my head, you know, like there was a bit I remember doing when I was like nine, right? And it was this Joey thing, and I had all these variations, And the kids in the playground would ask me if I would do the Joey thing, and I'd do it for them. And I'd do it like, all, you know, and like, that's, I think, the moment that I started doing stand up, you know.
Yeah. Mine doesn't go back that far. Like, I don't even think it really occurred to me. I always loved stand up, but it never occurred to me that that was something that I could do. I kind of, when I was a kid, like, I used to want to be an actor, and like, I really liked Saturday Night Live and that kind of thing. But I started like doing my radio show, and that was kind of a step towards stand up. And we would have like these crazy outlandish storylines going on and stuff like that. And years ago in the early 2000s, I think I just had an idea that started with a conversation I had with some friends at a party about just talking through, we were tripping on LSD at the time, but we were talking about setting up a business that would make profit off people getting, women getting pregnant and signing some sort of contract with us, that in the off chance that that child becomes like rich and successful, we would somehow get a cut. And I'd written this monologue that I didn't know what to do with. It ended up being a one-act play that St. John Theatre Company put on in like 2006.
It's like a modern-day slavery thing.
Well, sort of, but it was meant, the idea was that I was going to, well, I don't know if it was me or not, but the character was going to deliver this business plan with like a big smile and enthusiasm, and it's in the logic in a twisted kind of way sort of makes sense, but it's obviously a horrible, awful thing to be talking about. And I didn't like about when they put it on, the guy that directed it helped kind of rewrite the script to incorporate more characters. Well, at first I'd written it as a monologue, and then I kind of split it up into, so that he was presenting it to like a group of people that were kind of hearing his business plan. And the guy that ended up directing it helped kind of rewrite it and put in some more actual jokes in it. And but I found when they did it, the tone was kind of like, I wanted it to be presented kind of with a straight face, kind of as if I'm seriously presenting this obviously ridiculous plan, but the tone of it was more winky, I guess, and kind of like, everybody's in on the joke, right? Nudge, nudge, and like just beating people over the head with it. I don't know. It went from being satire to parody, I think, is the best way that I could think to describe it. That's not really what I had in mind. But yeah, I had ideas like that. And I had tried stand-up like before this main chunk in like 2004, I think. And I just had a story about being on mushrooms and going to the bar with my friends and them all trying to like pick up chicks. And I was just observing them off to the side. But yeah, and then the dead mom porno thing, just having to have that conversation with May and realizing like, I'm super embarrassed about this, is probably funny. And that turned into a thing, but I'd always been kind of telling people stories, I guess. So I had stuff. I never,
yeah.
So the Joey thing, like, was that a joke or what exactly was that?
Yeah, it was like, actually,
do you remember? Can you do the Joey thing for us?
Well, it's got some visual elements, so I'm afraid not.
Well, basically
it's about the guy says, "Hey, I'm Joey, and my mother's," and Joey's got his cheeks squished together towards his mouth.
Okay,
right, and he says, "Is your mother fat? Is your dad fat? Is your brother fat?" You know, the teacher said, "Joey, can you smile under all that fat?" And I said, "Sure." And then you smile, and it's like, you know, because your cheeks are all pushed together. And then there's like, you know, the hearing one. And anyway, it's just all, it's just,
he
it's
has
just
a hearing kid one, stuff. Obviously.
It's just kids itself. Stuff, right? It's like kids' jokes.
You were a little weirdo, I think.
Yeah, probably.
You still are. We all are on some level. Oh, yeah. You have to be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We are all individuals.
Right. So do you remember that first set at the Wilser's Room?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually,
like, what did you think it was going to be compared to what it was? Was there any surprise or Did it go down as planned?
I think I did okay, you know. I don't think it was, like, all bad, you know. I guess I was so not knowing what to expect that I didn't... Well, and you don't have anything to compare it to either, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, there's nothing to compare it to. It's, like, the best you've ever done.
Right.
Up until that point. That's when I should have quit comedy right there.
Yeah, that was...
Because that would have been the best I've ever done. And I would have...
Yeah. Well, compared to the music open mics, that was, like... I was, in my mind, I was probably destroying because to have any laughs at all, like I was lucky to have anybody look in my direction at the music open mic. Wow. So even that Somerset show that I did with Lloyd, there was hardly anybody there. So there was no like big laughs happening. It wasn't a good show. Mark Splude was also on that show. So that that started our friendship that persists to this day. But yeah, that first Wilser's Room show where I actually had to pause for a laugh on like a punchline, I kind of almost reminded myself like, oh yeah, that sentence was supposed to be funny. And, it was just really weird to, cause I'd gotten so used to just barreling through and to actually have to pause for a laugh was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it was. It's weird. It's interesting, yeah, for sure.
Like, do you remember what bits you did on that first one, or do you still use
them?
They're
the exact same ones that I use today. I haven't changed a damn thing. No, I don't. There's probably the one, like I think I kind of started out doing one-liners.
Yeah. Was the peanut butter one there, though,
no, from the start? No, I think probably the one that was there was, like most Canadians, I like to go clubbing. But when it's not seal season, I have to find something else to do. That was probably there.
Yeah.
But I honestly don't remember, you know. I've written so many terrible jokes since then. It's just, it's probably the best stuff. Yeah. Right. Like, I'm sure that there's like your set, you know, you're saying that there was bones that you picked out of there that you're still using today. And it's probably the same with me.
Yeah.
You know, it's just more honed and sharpened, you know.
Yeah. Well, like even most of those. Yeah. And the other two of the original four of the open mic bits were my Monday night GED stripper one and the diamond stripper one, which are, I think with a story, it's can be framed in so many different ways, I guess. So it's easier to work with. And I think those are all four of those. I still do. I would still pull them out. But most of them started out as 20 minute long rambles at the open mic that was probably just dreadful to listen to. Like most of those I can do in 5 minutes now, and I don't even remember what's missing from most of them.
Yeah.
But I feel like especially with a one-liner, there'd be kind of less to work with. There's only so many words that you can move around, I guess.
Yeah.
So it either works or it doesn't. Like what, I guess, how does, when you have a one-liner, is there much editing, or you just either have it
or
you don't?
Oh, yeah. It's like when I'm trying to put a one-liner, I'm trying to be as succinct as possible with as few words.
Yeah.
And the first part of the one-liner, I want to make it so that everybody understands the joke. And also to kind of lead them down a way.
Mm.
And then the second part, which might be the punchline, or might even just be the end of the sentence, or it might be a sentence away, that's the punchline. That's when I, you know, turn the tables and I always try and leave the funniest word at the very end.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny because to me, it's like a little puzzle. This little wordplay puzzle, because you're trying to, it's like that one, my parents asked me what I wanted for Christmas, and I said, I want a watch.
Yeah.
And right there, you're thinking a wristwatch, right? And they wouldn't let me. There's the diversion. And you get it. And it's, but if I said want to, doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right? I have to use that slang wanna in order for it to work. Right?
Yeah. Well, I think I have a similar approach as far as a story goes, but I think I'm moving full sentences around in the same way that you're kind of looking at individual words, I think. Because I still have to... When I first do it, I just kind of barf it out as if, like, the same way that I would be telling you the story, I guess, if me and you were just sitting down. And kind of as I'm going, I feel like even in the writing process, I kind of ad-lib the same way that I kind of would on stage, where if I'm just, like, telling the story and I kind of think of a good line in the moment, I think just the process of typing it up puts me in a similar mindset to if I'm telling the story live, and I'll kind of ad-lib and throw in stuff here and there or that. But a lot of times I'll have a story just completely eat it on stage and just have to move like a couple of things around here and there, just to, like, there's just something wrong with how I set it up and that it doesn't make,
you know, it's
sense.
It's funny, like you do the longer stories and I do the one-liners, and the funny thing about the one-liner is that they don't reflect a lot of personality.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're doing the long story, it's got to be you, right? You know, whereas the one-liner, it's to me, like, I've been working on the deadpan aspect of it.
Mm.
And I find the more detached I become from the joke and just say the joke and let it be on its own, and not put my personality in, the more the joke works. Right.
I think the personality comes through in just which topics that you're bringing up, I guess, and just your sense of humor comes through, I guess. But yeah, in a different way. There's definitely a lot more John Forward in my material.
Yeah. 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 Mine are more just clever play on words sort of thing.
Yeah.
Where yours is like a story about you.
Yeah, and I try to insert that stuff in it, but probably line for line. There's definitely, like, you've got more jokes in a minute than I do. But sometimes even building up and kind of painting a picture for people and telling that story kind of makes, when there is a punchline, it makes it hit that much harder because people are invested in it.
Yeah, and you've also given them more chance to relate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it, I think. And compared to when I tried stand up the first time in like the mid 2000s, I'm trying to put myself more into it. And like I said, with the dead mom porno bit, that was kind of laying myself out on display for everybody. Like, now I'm not even embarrassed about it, but when I first sang, it was hard enough just getting the words out of my mouth. And I think even if I'm saying that somebody hasn't specifically had that thing happen to them so that they can relate, they at least know that they have their own weird stuff that they're uncomfortable with and don't like to talk about. So is Little Caesar a wrestling?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it is.
Well, let's take a break. Do you want to tell us about your song selection and we'll go to that?
Oh, what did I send you? Everett Brothers?
Yeah.
What was the name of the song?
No Hard Feelings.
No Hard Feelings. I don't know. I like it because it makes me sad.
All right.
You know, it's very, it's a lot of emotion in there. And that's funny because, I find that music is, you know, it's more of an emotional experience, and mm-hmm. and comedy isn't. And it's funny you're talking about.
Think I try to make mine more of an emotional experience.
It's jokes. More emotional for you.
Yeah.
Right. But I find it funny that you're talking about that, and then yeah, and it's.
Yeah. All right. Actually, before we go, do you want to? If I ever think of it, I keep asking people to do this, but I always forget to go back and do it. But do you want to give us a station ID? You want to say You're listening to St. John Forward Radio on local 107.3 FM. Local 107.3 FM.
All right.
I probably could have explained this to you off mic while we were playing the song and done it when we came back. But
well, let's do that.
Well, we're here.
Okay. You're listening to John Forward Radio.
St. John Forward.
You're listening to St. John Forward Radio on 107.3 FM.
All right. And we'll be back after some Abbott Brothers.
When my body won't hold me anymore, and it finally lets me free, will I be ready? When my feet won't walk another mile, and my lips give their last kiss goodbye, will my hands be steady? When I lay down my fears, my hopes and my doubts, the rings on my fingers and the keys to my house, with no hard feelings. When the sun hangs low in the west and the light in my chest won't be kept held at bay any longer. When the jealousy fades away and it's ash and dust for cash and lust, and it's just hallelujah and love and thought, love in the words, love in the songs they sing in the church, and no hard feelings. Lord knows they haven't done much good for anyone. Kept me afraid and cold with so much to have. Nobody won't hold me anymore, and it finally lets me free. Where will I go? Will the trade winds take me south through Georgia grain, or tropical rain, or snow from the heavens? Will I join with the ocean blue, or run into a savior true, and shake hands laughing, and walk through the night straight to the light, holding the love I've known in my life, and no heart feelings. Lord knows they haven't done much good for anyone. Kept me afraid and cold with so much to I have no enemies. I have no enemies.
We're back here on St. John Forward Radio with my guest Troy Haynes, talking a little bit about the humble beginnings at the Wilser's Room. But since then, he started doing his own shows. How long was it after your first set there that you started doing the Elks Club shows?
So, geez, it was like 2 months.
Yeah.
2 months. It was like no time at all. Andrew Albert, I did. It was starving market around here for comedians, and somehow, like, just starting, I wound up, you know, on a stage with a professional headliner, and, you know, he wanted to set something up like right away. And, you know, he asked me, he seemed like a nice guy. And, so, you know, I borrowed a speaker system from work and, you know, we had that Elks Club thing and that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that, you know, it was, you know, Elks Club down in the basement.
There's a nice bookcase behind us, so we were on that end.
Yeah, that was a big joke to everybody as how it looked like the
living room.
Mom's basement or something, right? And, but, you know, there was one time there was like 15 people there, and I was like, wow, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm doing like usually hundreds.
Yeah, those were fun to do, but it was... yeah, it would have been more fun if there was more of an audience there, I guess. They started out pretty small.
Yeah. Yeah, they were.
How did Andrew Albert and you even get in touch about doing that if you had just started comedy a couple months earlier?
I was helping Shane, I think, with a little bit of legwork here,
okay.
You know, sort of thing. I don't remember really. Maybe I was performing or I went to go see the show or something. Anyway, we just started talking, and you know, so I had a film and television background, so you know, it wasn't like it was all foreign to me,
right?
You know, but yeah, the Elks Club, it was so small. One time, I thought, okay, it would be pretty cool to have a 50-50 draw, and you know. It was $2 a ticket, and one person bought a ticket, right? So what do you do?
Give
them a dollar back, right? You know?
Yeah.
So.
No, yeah, those were fun. And then from there, did you move right into the restaurant? Or was there a step in between?
So I did probably 6 or 7 shows at the Elks Club
right
before I got going. And then it was over to...
yeah, I was on at least over at the 3. Delta.
Yeah. And it was at the Delta. And when I was at the Delta, that's when I started moving more into the headliner sort of thing, you know, more expectations because there's actually an audience, right? Whereas the other one was more like rehearsal space.
Right? Yeah, you had a couple. We had the Andrew Albert show, and James Uloth was in there once. Did you have any other?
I actually was able to give James Uloth like $40. So
nice,
you know, for a professional headliner, that's
a pretty good deal.
Pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, but you know, James has come back and he's done other shows with me and stuff. Mm-hmm. But and Andrew certainly.
Yeah.
You know, Andrew actually did the first show I did in the restaurant, right? So,
right, yeah, it wasn't for there. I think the only one I did in the restaurant was the battle that we did where RF got you in trouble with one of the sponsors.
yeah, that was.
How many shows did you do in that room?
I did probably like 7, probably.
Really?
Yeah. Probably, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like that's kind of...
Until I got kicked out of there, so...
Yeah, it's kind of hard when you have kind of a common area, like a restaurant or something like that, where they're not stopping people from coming in who aren't going to the comedy
show.
Well,
that's right. And it's like, you know, trying to do comedy in a space that, you know, people want to... And expect to be able to talk in, you know, so...
Yeah, then there was there was a little kid in the room when I did the show, and
yeah,
they were actually fine. There was other people that didn't have such a great time, but the lady with the kid apologized to me on her way out for bringing her child there and said that she thought it was really funny.
Yeah, what that does is, like, you know, even though, like, so the bringing the kid in is one thing, right? But it's like what the it's even if you say it's okay to say this in front of the kid, the other people might feel uncomfortable saying that in front of a kid, you know. So there go your dick jokes, right? No dick jokes. And
what's the goddamn point?
Well, that's like from a lot of comedians, that's like a big chunk of their material, right? Yeah. But, you know, but the other part is it puts the fear in the comedian that he should be a little bit more reserved, you know.
Yeah, I never liked the idea of having to force yourself to be reserved for somebody who's not there for the show.
Yeah, anyway. That's why now it says 19 plus uncensored live comedy on all my tickets.
So. Yeah. Yeah, so after there, then you moved into the big Delta Ballroom. I did a few of those.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah, that's right.
Tell me about the new venue, the Crown Plaza.
Yeah, so I'm, I did a year or two in the ballroom, a year in the ballroom at the Delta, and now I'm doing mostly shows over at the Crown Plaza. Mm-hmm. I have a show next weekend, Scott Falconbridge.
Yeah,
and then. In February, James Mullinger at the Delta. That's going to be a big show, probably over 400 people.
Yeah,
right. But yeah, no, they've gotten certainly bigger, and they're, you know, I enjoy doing them. It's funny, stand up comedy led me into producing, and I really like producing, and you know, I don't know, I feel like kind of have a knack for it, if you will. But, yeah.
Well, it probably hurts you. You have a harder time focusing on the other thing of performing.
I most certainly do. I find that I don't get much chance to do that, and I hate that. I hate that part. I really, really like performing, and I like telling my jokes. And it's like I'm so split. You know, next year I'm not really sure where I'm going to go next year. I'd like to try and find the next step for me is to open up a comedy club, or another way of looking at it is a comedy space.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of the comedy space more than the comedy club, because I feel around here and in the Maritimes, there's a huge, talent. There's a lot of talent, and we have our own type of jokes and we have our own type of humor. And I got into producing shows to develop that. And I kind of got steered away a little bit going into more of the headliner shows. And, you know, what that has done, it's been very good, the headliner shows. It's helped me develop my company so that I have a great audience. I know how the business side, which is like stupidly important in comedy. I'm getting that down, right? Now it's time for me to bring it back for myself a little bit, so I can develop me a little bit, and I can develop the people that are around me that I want to see grow.
Why can't you just put yourself on all those big headliner shows?
It's not that I can't. It's not that I can't. It's like one. It's like they don't want to see me all the time, right? And B, it's like, I am so busy producing. I don't have time to write. I don't have time to refine. It's just like, I just have no time to work on my own stuff. And, and as you know, it's like, you have to like hit it. But you can't really pause in between, or it just,
right.
You have to, it's like a reset. You don't want to do that. Right. So. Just kind of taking a back seat.
Yeah. Well, I find it, it does, my operation is a lot smaller than yours, but even that little bit that I have to do takes away from the performance a bit too, and just I have to kind of, even before a show, normally if it's not my show, I like to kind of go off by myself and kind of run over my set in my head or whatever, but if I'm running the show, I kind of got to be around and say hi and all that stuff, and and I don't even have to worry about selling tickets.
I've had to deal with like huge emergencies just before I go up on stage.
Yeah.
And it's like, ouch, like you can't even get into the right headspace, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, hopefully, you know, dialing it back a little bit.
Yeah. You've been doing the shows at the Bunker in Ormupto. Is that kind of back to basics?
No, that's so in my company, that's just one of the product lines. Okay. I have the ballroom shows. I also have this other idea it's like pop-up franchising, mm-hmm. right? So it allows bar owners to buy shows from me, you know, and I give them a hand with the marketing and stuff, and
sure.
you know, set on a good show for them, mm-hmm. That sort of thing. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that room is. It's not my room. It's his room, right? Yeah. But I'd like to, like, there are a lot of good comedians here, and you know, the other thing is, like, people are really enjoying comedy. There's a bit of a comedy boom here, and you know, people are enjoying not only going to comedy, but there are a lot of people that are stepping out and trying it, you know, and like that's great, you know, the more the merrier, really, you know, why not?
Yeah. Well, there was one local that you tried to go out on a branch for and put on one of those headline shows and didn't pan out so great. Named John Forward.
Oh yeah.
How do you want to? I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about. Can you give us your side of the John Forward headline bomb?
See, I don't look at it as a bomb. You know,
well, yeah, you didn't.
I look at it as an extreme growth opportunity.
Yeah.
No, not extreme. But yeah, you know, I don't know.
Well, for anybody who doesn't, Troy booked me as to headline. It was a half hour headline spot in the Delta Ballroom, and he had kind of reached out looking for suggestions for headliners, and I kind of half jokingly said John Forward, and Troy called my bluff, and you said that you liked how I was grasping for the brass ring, I think, and you wanted to help me out, and we put this show together, and it wasn't what I was hoping for.
Well, no one hopes to have 27 people walk out. I mean,
well,
but you know what? The thing about it is you learned what's expected of you, and I learned what's expected of me, and you know, it was like, I didn't lose any customers. You know, it was. I think to me, it's more of a positive thing, right? Like it really, like doing that really quickened the lesson for me.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, what lesson did you take away from that?
Don't hire John Ford. No. What lesson I learned was, the headliner has a responsibility to make everybody happy, and you know, the other part about it is, I had a train of thought, but it's gone. It's just more, it taught me about the roles of the different comedians, right? And I thought you did well, except I didn't hit the cues that you would help, that you would want.
That was one,
but that was a small part of it. But you know, I don't know. Like to me, I think what
I think you should have just stuck to the things that you had been.
Yeah, I should have done it kind of bare bones. Yeah.
You should have just stuck with what you had yeah. already practiced rather than creating a bunch of new stuff.
Yeah, well, that's the frustrating part for me is that I'm not sure how different it would have gotten if, like, this little thing and this little thing were different, or if I didn't bother with any of, like, the cues or the video or any of that nonsense.
I don't know. Like,
it went really well in dress rehearsal. You were there for that.
Yeah, it did. But, you know, I don't know. Like, I think it was, like, I look at it as a positive experience.
Yeah,
you
know? I'll know better. Like, I even...
But it's not even the matter of knowing better. It's, like, it's just... We learned something so quickly, you know. Well, like
when I was doing my my one man show over the summer, that was an hour just me, no opener or anything. And I thought about, oh, maybe I should have this song come in when I do this part the same way. Which I think in that situation, the technician that I had working is somebody that, like, they're there specifically for that kind of thing, and they do plays and stuff, and it might have been better. But even then, I kind of had flashbacks of John Forward and friends at the Delta. I'm like, you know what, it's hard enough doing this hour of storytelling, let's just focus on that. And I decided if I ever redo that show, if I take it to another fringe festival, or if I just rent a space and put it on again myself, then now that I've got the words down pat, then I can add some sprinkles on top.
Yeah.
It's just less things to go wrong. And it would have been better in both cases if
it would, like, have been better at the Elks Club.
Yeah. But I don't know if it had gone well or poorly, I would know it's 100% this because of the set, and I have less things to blame if it goes bad, and I can take more of the glory when it goes well.
Yeah, and it upped my game that way to also about, you know, working more on the production.
Yeah.
You know.
That's something I'd still like to do. I would like to be able to put more into, especially if I'm trying to create a mood with, like, with a story or something, having some subtle...
Well,
stuff, you know, bells and whistles thrown in there, but it's not if it's going
to
do
like my show. Next season. Like, I'm really hoping to be able to provide people those opportunities, you know, have more local shows. You know, it's just a matter of me being able to secure some space that's, you know, economical and everything. And
well, if you want to bring Honey Garlic to Fredericton.
I absolutely do. You know, it's like I brought Midlife Crisis from Moncton, and they did very well. You know, I think I actually had them twice.
The show went well. I went through, I did it five nights in a row, an hour, just me, no opener, no booze even.
Yeah.
So sober audiences, and I've worked out some kinks over it. I think the Halifax Fringe is, like, super expensive. That's what I was thinking for the next step for it, but who knows? But we're coming up on the end of the show. You mentioned some the upcoming shows at the Crown.
Yeah. Scott Falconbridge on the 27th, and James Mulliger at the Delta on February 24th.
And when's the bunker show that I'm doing? That was February.
Hasn't been set down.
At some point, I might be at the bunker in Oromocto. O'Leary's No Jokes Barred Deluxe on February 2nd. And this has been St. John Forward Radio with Troy Haynes. Thank you for doing the show. And
thank you, John.
That's it. Go to johnforward.com for all of your John Forward needs. And